And now it's time for the TOT Cast with your hosts, Chris Okranitz and Ryan Greco.
And welcome back to the TOT Cast. Of course, I'm Ryan Greco. I'm being joined by the magnificent Chris Okranitz. You know me, I'm always about giving praise to people when I see it too, okay? That's just how I operate. It's what I'm about. And I think you've come to accept this after a few years, so...
I'm flattered. You know what it is. Flattered.
Yes. What about me?
Yeah, you're pretty magnificent as well, Ryan. You're looking for some compliments back there, buddy?
I'm not fishing at all. I am not fishing at all. At all. Well, maybe just a little, but, you know. Not at all. All in good fun. Chris, quite an eventful week. First of all, fantastic job on the podcast with David Marasuti. Great job with the Leafs talk. Big fan of it.
Muchas gracias, señor.
And as you know, guys, it may be a brand split, maybe a WCW/NWO kind of brand split we're going through right now, but let it be known, it's still a united front and everybody still loves each other. So you never know when we might have Marasuti on here. You never know when I might be paying a visit to the Leafs side. But you know what? I will start it off with something interesting is... We had an opportunity to go watch the All-Star game together, and we were actually in your apartment, just, you know, kicking back, having a good time watching the game. And there was something that I saw, and this is how I realized that this specific All-Star game was a success. Let's put John Scott aside. I think everybody already knows who's listens to the podcast knows how I feel about that situation.
You're excited. First of all,
I was getting up, and I was at. I mean, you put it best, right?
You were pretty over the top with your celebrations for a fourth line grinder, and it was awesome.
Yeah, I might as well have been part of his family. I think that's what you said.
Yeah, I did. I thought you were part of the John Scott clan.
Yeah, I might as well be. You know, Scott's a good Scottish name. Fair enough. It's right in the name.
There's a whole lot of John Scott coming out of your mouth that night.
Oh, God. Anyway. One thing above all else, though, I think that a lot of people would appreciate that actually sat down. People who are actually fans of hockey realized there was actual forechecking in that game.
There was some. Not a lot, but there was enough. I think the play of the goalies was more impressive than the forechecking. It was the first time where you didn't really see a half-hearted effort the entire game, and it was reflective in the score, especially in the final game there. You got guys like Luongo making a couple saves that were pretty nice. Pretty over the top, and it kept the game competitive, which was a rarity to see. I can't remember the last All-Star game people were this engaged and interested.
You mean the players, right?
Well, both players and fans.
Yeah, that's true.
It's very often where you just look, yeah, it's a circus. I'm going to watch my favorite players play, and that's it.
I think the second coolest thing that happened there, and we'll be brief on the NHL All-Star game, because I know you guys covered it briefly in the other podcast, but
yeah, there's not much to say. I mean, it's an All-Star game, right?
Yeah.
Like, it is what it is.
But I will say, as a fan, it was kind of cool to see the fact that at one point they had nothing but Predators on the ice.
Yep.
And they scored. The fans, not only did they score, but the fans there started chanting, "Go Preds, go, go Preds, go." And I think that was one of the coolest things that happened that I've seen in an All-Star game in quite some time. And hell, any All-Star game, to be perfectly honest.
I wouldn't mind seeing Raptors fans do that when DeRozan and Lowry on the court together for the Eastern Conference on Valentine's Day.
And as fun as that would be, it still wouldn't be the same as if we had five guys like the Atlanta Hawks did last year.
Yeah.
They had five guys on at one point. And if that had been held in Atlanta, how cool would that have been?
That's actually a really good point. And it couldn't happen with the Raptors for obvious reasons.
Yes.
But it's interesting food for thought.
Hell, we're lucky we even have a starting lineup of All-Stars in our franchise history.
Yeah. No, seriously. We only have, what, six All-Stars?
Six. And it literally was just filling out right down to the last second.
Yeah.
But speaking of the Raptors, I mean, what a tear they were on.
Well, they were going streaking there for a while.
Jesus. Well, someone call Will Ferrell. You know what? Who knows? He might be there for the All-Star weekend, too.
I wouldn't be surprised. There's a lot of people coming here.
Yeah. I mean, it was an incredible run that they went on. Franchise record, 11 straight wins. And, you know, it's funny that we mentioned that it's, you know, a lot of people are very, very excited and happy about that streak. But it's fun to mention, you know, when you go back and you look back a year from now, they're actually relatively at the same space they were as far as their record goes. But you couldn't see two more different teams.
I totally agree. The offensive numbers are up this year. The defense may be slightly down, but the offense has been so damn good that it's overshadowed some of their defensive deficiencies. And people are crying about certain things like rim protection and, you know, can this team compete
like
in the playoff? Yeah.
To be honest.
More than justifiable. But at the end of the day, they're winning games. And I've also heard people throw the argument out there that, well, who's this 11-game win streak against? It's only they only beat three teams with a winning record over the 11 games.
Yes.
What do you want the Raptors to do? They only can play who's assigned in front of them on the schedule each night, and they beat them.
Yep.
Straight up. I totally get the argument that, yeah, they only beat three teams with a winning record, but again, what do you want them to do?
They won the games they were supposed to win. Not only that, they won the games against good teams. And I think one thing people are slowly starting to forget is that this is the best the East has been in a solid 10 years.
Yeah, it's a little bit better. But at the same time, I still feel like none of them can really compete with the West or give the top three in the West a good run.
You could say that, though, about the top in the East as well. The NBA is a parity-free league.
Yep, it's right? A like superstar league, man.
It is what it is, right? You know, everybody, nobody. It's crazy to think the Atlanta Hawks, they finished number one in the East last year, and no one ever gave them a shot.
Yeah,
and,
they're underdogs.
And lo and behold, they didn't even make it past the second round. You know, or did they make it to the third? Sorry. They made it to the third round against Cleveland, and they got beat the way that they should. Surprise, surprise. You know what I mean? Like, it's a parity-free league, and sometimes you got to just kind of take your accomplishments where you get them. That's why it's a big reason. It's a big deal to win Atlantic Division titles for the Raptors, for example.
Well, Boston's nipping at their heels, though. I mean, they're only 5 games back.
They are only 5 games back.
It may sound like a lot, but for as quick as you can have a win streak, you can also compile a losing streak pretty quickly. I'm not trying to be like a Debbie Downer here or anything, but at the same time, streaks, they happen. Things level out. This team could easily, let's say we had an injury scare with Lowry.
Yes.
Let's say that was more severe, and we're leaning on DeRozan and the rest of the supporting cast to really pick it up and carry it. You never know. Things could happen.
But it is fun to mention that the NBA is a league where when a team has your number, they have your number, and it takes a seismic shift in roster for that to change. Look at the Chicago Bulls, for example. Despite the fact that for most of the year that they were under 500, they still have had the Raptors' number almost every single time they faced them.
It's bizarre. Some things you just can't explain.
The same way you could say that about the Celtics, though. Yep. We've had the Celtics' number since the minute they got rid of KG, Ray Allen, and Paul Pierce. When that team became a shell of itself, the Raptors had their number from start to finish, and they still do. It's a fun fact to bring up. But even with that being said, you know, it's a great time of the year. I mean, the team has still won 12 of their last 13. Yep. They've put themselves in such a great position coming into the final stretch of the season, going into the All-Star game. And speaking of the All-Star game and speaking of everything that we're going into, I mean, the Raptors going into this is just, I'm just excited to see what's going to be happening next with them.
Well, where do you think this team can improve if they do need to improve? Because, I mean, let's face it. What they have right now is good enough to compete in the Eastern Conference, but is it good enough to win it?
No, it's not.
So where would they improve?
I think it's fair to say that, you know, people are complaining about rim protection, yet we have a guy in Bismack Biyombo who is just a straight hustle and heart guy. He's almost a poor man's Tristan Thompson in a sense. He'll go out there and he'll get you his rebounds. He'll be able to block a few shots here and there. The only problem is that there's only just one guy like him on our roster. Well, and if anything, we need another guy like him, I would say.
You think so?
Someone who's a little bit more skilled in a sense, I guess.
I don't think we do at all, to be honest.
Why is that?
Look at the Eastern Conference, okay? Break it all down. Who can kill you inside in the paint? Who can really kill you that's a big man?
In the Eastern Conference?
Yep. Maybe what, Al Horford?
There's a lot of B-level guys. Like with the Wizards, you've got Gortat. With, you know, even with the Cavaliers, I mean, Mozgov, as great as he was in the finals, he's still like,
okay,
you know,
so it's an area you could sacrifice.
There's a lot of B-level guys, yeah.
If you're going to win the East.
But that's the whole league in a sense, right?
Yeah, I'm getting a larger point here. In the whole East, who do you need to stop if you want to win the East? You need
LeBron.
You need to stop LeBron.
That's it. Because so you don't even necessarily have to stop Kyrie because we can actually. A lot of people don't want to talk about this, but it's true. You can match Kyrie's talent with Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan. And maybe even just Kyle Lowry by himself against Kyrie.
Hell yeah. Kyrie would be a good matchup. But at the end of the day, if you're going to win the East, it goes through LeBron. And how do you got to slow him down.
You got to beat him up a little bit. You need a Draymond Green style, a guy who can guard him and match his quickness and be physical with him.
So that's why Damari Carroll's here.
Yes.
Why not go get another guy that can defend the perimeter, is a tenacious defender, and can actually match up with LeBron when Damari Carroll, let's say, gets into foul trouble or gets tired or, heaven forbid, stays injured.
Yeah.
You got somebody who can slow down LeBron because unless...
Do you have anyone in mind, though?
Well, there was a report that came out earlier today about how the Raptors are interested in Markieff Morris and P.J. Tucker. I think P.J. Tucker could be that guy.
Now, I'm glad you brought up this name because I heard this earlier in the day, and I'll be completely honest with you. I don't know a thing about P.J. Tucker. So, please, by all means, Yeah, what kind of player is he?
Well, he's kind of like, some would call him like a combo. He's like a, he's not quite a big man, but he's not quite a guard. He's kind of in between. So he's like a, an oversized wing player where he's not that tall, but he's bulky. He's always been that way, even since his days playing back at Texas and the University of Texas. He's he's been a ferocious rebounder, a tenacious defender, and somebody who's got an okay jump shot that you get by with. But the most important thing there, in my opinion, is that the defending and the rebounding, those are two areas that can help the Raptors immediately. DeMar DeRozan, when they played them last night, said that P.J. Tucker, he was impressed with the way he was defending them. He was in his grill the whole night. He gave him a tough time. He made him earn every shot. I'm not comparing DeMar DeRozan to LeBron James here, but let's say we get even a fraction of that.
Yes.
Okay, maybe more, a little, maybe more than a fraction, but we get some semblance of what he was doing last night to DeMar on LeBron, and then combine that with DeMarre Carroll. So at the same time, you have two on-ball defenders that can wreak havoc and make his night a lot tougher than what it usually is. I think that's a good match for the Raptors.
And a scary thought even to take into consideration is the fact that a guy like P.J. Tucker, you know, if he's working that hard for a team that's going nowhere, imagine what he's going to do in the playoffs with a team that actually has a shot.
I agree. And the other thing with him as well is that he's relatively affordable. He's going to make five and change this year and next year. The Raptors could cut him before the free agency starts June 30th, I believe the date is. So that helps as well if they want to move on with him. But I think he'd be a little bit more affordable than, let's say, a Markieff Morris. Because here's the thing with Markieff Morris. His contract is bigger. He's got two or three more years left on it. Is that the answer for the power forward position going forward in the future? Probably not. But to acquire a player like him, it would require the Raptors to give up Patrick Patterson, plus either a Bruno Caboclo, Bebe, or Dellen Wright, and some picks. So that's a, that's, you're taking on a long-term asset. You're dishing out a contract that matches in Patrick Patterson. You're dishing out a player that has long-term control, which would be one of the three prospects, and you're giving up a draft pick for a guy that you're not even sure is the future, not even sure if he's your long-term answer. I don't see how that makes any sense to go get a Markieff Morris. Sure, he's buddies with Kyle Lowry and all that. That's great. But in terms of what Masai Ujiri has said he wants to do with this team and a long-term plan, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't fit. So that's why I think a guy like P.J. Tucker that's got maybe half a season, and if the Raptors decide to keep him, a year and a half at a much more affordable price makes a lot more sense. And aside from being affordable, it won't cost as much to get him. So I just feel like if there was a player that they're going to go out and a report that has some legs to it, it would be P.J. Tucker.
And speaking about the idea of moving draft picks, moving prospects, I guess you could say, and it, for a guy like either P.J. Tucker or Markieff Morris, we actually had the opportunity to speak with somebody who probably has more knowledge about these prospects than almost anybody in the media right now in Toronto. And we actually had a chance to go and speak with Megan McPeak this week on the TOT cast. And she's, for anyone who doesn't know, she is the play-by-play analyst of the Raptors 905. You can always catch her. Any of the games are all webcasted on YouTube. And if they're not on YouTube, you can always catch them on NBA TV Canada. Actually making history as the first ever female play-by-play analyst of any Canadian professional sports team. I mean, given this country's entire history in sports, I mean, that's a huge honor.
It is a huge honor. And I mean, when you look across not just Canadian media, but North American media as a whole, in particular sports, it's predominantly white and male for the most part when you look at the demographic. And you see more females emerging into it now, which is great because it needs more voices in the same stuff all the time. But it's still a rarity, especially when you look around. And it's very nice to see a female get involved and actually do something more than just, let's say, a sideline reporter that you happen to see, or people would like group them into being a cliche. So I think it's very refreshing to actually see strides being made in Canada. And I think it's something that we can look forward to in the future as well.
And not just that, an African-Canadian female on top of all of that.
It's even better. I mean, I can't say enough good things about it because the media, it needs stuff like this.
It does.
So it's nice to see.
It needs differing opinions. And with that, we're going to give to you right now the interview that I had myself with Megan McPeak, the play-by-play analyst of the Raptors 905.
And now joining me on the TOT cast here is the one and only play-by-play announcer for the Raptors 905, Megan McPeak. Megan, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to come talk to us on the TOT cast today. How are you doing?
I am great. First of all, I just want to say thanks for having me on. Always appreciate someone who wants to talk to me, so I appreciate you making time for me.
Oh, believe me, I always want to talk to you, Megan, at every time. So, Megan, this has got to have been a big year for you. I mean, especially 2015 was a huge year for you personally. You're able to, you know, for anyone who doesn't know, Megan has made history as the first ever play-by-play announcer for Toronto's professional sports team in the Raptors 905. And, I mean, just a year ago, you were working with the NBL Canada. You were doing some games with the Brampton A's. You're doing their play-by-play. So walk us through what the journey was from going there to working with the Raptors 905 now.
Well, it's been a fun journey. I can definitely say that there's been a lot of ups and downs throughout the journey. First and foremost, if anybody, I'm going to put it out there, if anybody's thinking about getting into sports media or sports broadcasting, the one thing I can tell you is that it is a journey and it will not happen overnight. A lot of people don't know that when they get into it, they think it's going to be, oh, I'm just going to get a job right away. It is definitely not that. So that was probably one of the most difficult things for me to learn, was just to be patient and know that my time will come when everything is ready to go. And essentially the cards are in the right place and the dominoes are ready to fall. So I got lucky that I did the hard work. I guess you could say I was in grind mode from start to finish and really just kept pushing and kept trying to stay positive, and then was able to get the job with the Brampton A's, now obviously in Orangeville with the relocation, for their inaugural season in 2013, and then was back on the mic last season for 2014-15 season. And then at the end of the season, I kept grinding, kept pushing, kept networking, and then was able to get in touch with my boss at NBA TV Canada, Aaron LaFontaine, and things just kind of kept moving from there. And then in September, October, I was offered the position and didn't even hesitate to say no.
Of course not.
It was one of those things where I sort of did the, if you could say, the dramatic pause where he offered the position and I said, can I have time to think about it? And about 15 seconds later, accepted the position.
Oh my gosh.
Wasn't really something that I needed to or wanted to think about. So it's been a whirlwind, and it's been, the best part about it is it's been fun. So that's the main thing, is I've had fun on the journey.
And you know what? I'm glad you brought that up. Before we get into Raptors talk, I think for anybody who's listening and is trying to get into media or is currently a student in school, I want you to explain to them, or just to describe to them, how important is it to have a personality? It's one thing to have the degree. It's one thing to have the education. But how important is it to have a good personality, especially around your superiors, and making sure that your name is never out of the conversation?
That's a huge component. And for myself, it was one thing that I've been told by different people, my mentors, is be yourself and don't try to be someone you're not. Don't try to be somebody else in the industry. Don't try to be like so-and-so. Yeah. Be yourself, because that's what's going to stand out. And if there was one piece of advice, aside from obviously being patient and knowing that it's not going to happen overnight, that I could give anyone, it would be to be yourself, because that was probably the best piece of advice that I was given throughout the journey, from being in school at Humber back in the
Humber Hawks
2000s to now is to be yourself, because your personality stands out and you're yourself, people will know that you're authentic in the way that you speak to them and your passion and your integrity for the job and the industry. So I think authenticity, especially in this industry with the players and the coaches and front offices, if you're authentic to them, they'll be more willing to speak to you about certain things and give you sort of the quote-unquote leaked information before it's actually made public and whatnot. So that's probably one of the most important things, is the personality of yourself. Be yourself and don't let anybody change who you are, because then you're no longer authentic.
And it's funny, I've been lucky enough that I've had a couple of very influential people in media around me in the Toronto area. And I think the best piece of advice they ever gave me, to touch on what you were saying earlier, is they said, don't ever try and change your voice when you're actually on the air.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I know myself, and I know I've heard it from a couple other people as well who are at the NBA level. I hate listening to myself. But the only way to get better, you have to listen to yourself, because if you can't self-critique yourself and pick apart what you do that you need to work on, then nobody's going to want to give you a job. If you can't even listen to yourself, why would thousands of people, excuse me, around North America or the world want to listen to you? So as much as I hate hearing my voice, oh my goodness, like, yeah, you have to be able to critique yourself, and I'm with you. You have to be able to be yourself, and one of those is not changing your voice.
So now, moving forward, the Raptors 905 started off a little slow this year, but my goodness, have they picked it up in the last, I'd say, month or so. They've won six straight now, correct?
Yes, last night was their sixth straight. They're going for number seven tonight.
Yes, exactly. And so what was it? What is it? You've had an opportunity to watch this team night in and night out. And I remember you talking to me earlier about a month ago when we were talking, and you were saying, you know, it was frustrating to see that they were so close. Like they were just on the verge of getting it. And so what was it that's happened now specifically that they have seemed to have it now and have just been tearing through the league?
I think it would be probably the turning point, in my opinion, would be the NBA D League showcase that took place back in early. Wow, my mind has lost me. I believe it was back in January, early January, that the D League showcase took place. And that, I think, was the turning point for them in Santa Cruz. They didn't have NBA assignments. None of the guys, there was no Bennett, Caboclo, Powell, Nogueira, Wright. None of those guys were on assignment during the showcase. Mm-hmm. That was also the time leading up to when the big club was heading over to London. So that, I think, was the turning point. No assignments when you're in Santa Cruz. You've got to take your whole roster. In case people don't realize, Simbular was on the restriction that he was only playing home games during the first part of the season, working on his conditioning, getting his footing, trying to drop some weight. And that was a turning point, I think, also, too, for the coaching staff. They had to make a decision. Do we take him, or does he stay at home and we stick with this no road game? They made the decision to take him, and I think for Sim as well, that was also a turning point. So I think the showcase was a chance for the guys to get their footing under them, figure out how to play as a unit, because the way the D-League goes, on a night-in and night-out basis, guys are going back and forth between big clubs and small clubs.
Absolutely.
You never know when you're going to get them or when they're going to leave. So it's definitely a challenge, not only for the coaching staff to make the adjustments, but also to the actual players on the roster,
mm-hmm.
who are always there night in and night out, every single day, practicing. So I think that was a chance for the guys to get some cohesion, get some chemistry, and really figure things out. And from day one of training camp, over in Vancouver, when they went, the team went to the Raptors training camp and then had their own training camp out of that. From day one, Coach Mermis and his coaching staff have instilled of sticking with the process and buying in. And this team has bought in and they've stuck with the process. They've maintained positivity through the tough time when they lost nine straight. And then the showcase happened and it was like literally a 360 spin. And something clicked. And from that moment, things were working. I mean, you look at the Raptors and you look at the 905. It took a trip across the pond for the Raptors to get things going. And between the two teams, they won 16 straight games. Tonight, both of them can make it 18 games combined between the two of them. The Raptors obviously going for 11 and the 905 going for 7. So both teams, I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was getting away from home. Obviously, the Raptors have been on the road the majority of the beginning of the season, but getting away and just figuring it out. But both of the teams, the trip to London and the showcase for the D-League team, they've both managed to figure it out, and they've been rolling ever since.
I don't think anyone would have ever in a million years would have thought of both the Raptors 905 and the Raptors team at the same time putting together 16 straight wins. I mean, that's a number. You don't even think about that number until you just brought it up right now.
And what's crazy is both of them, for right now, as long as both teams keep winning, it's going to be a new franchise record in consecutive wins until they can lose, knock on wood. It doesn't happen for both of them tonight, but they both have two tough matchups in the Detroit Pistons for the Raptors and then the Erie BayHawks for the 905. So if they can keep it rolling, then, I mean, it's great. And Toronto fans and Canadian basketball fans as a whole are having the chance to be part of watching history with the franchises creating these records.
Absolutely. And so moving on with some of the guys that you were talking about that have been kind of up and down, as you said, it's a very volatile situation in the NBDL. You like you said, you never know when guys are going to be coming in and coming out, and it could be a huge influx of talent 1 minute, and then the next minute it's, you know, a guy who's only playing 3 minutes a night when the other guys are here is now all of a sudden getting put in to play 20. One of the guys that we've seen that came down that kind of made a lot of people turn their head and realize was Anthony Bennett. And he and what I think was a lot was a bigger shock to a lot of people's that may not know him, right? Like there's a lot of people that know him around the city and know that, you know, he's not the kind of guy that's going to sit there and try and act like a diva, at least not anymore. I think he's definitely learned his lesson in that sense. But when he asked to be brought down to the Raptors 905 to get some extra work in. So I was just taking a quick look at his numbers right now, and he's averaged in 5 games, he's averaged 11 points, 3.6 rebounds. In the time that you've seen him play, have you seen anything, has there been anything specifically that you can tell that he's been working on while he's been at the Raptors 905?
Well, it's hard to say because the first 3 games that he was down with the 905, the first two of them, not his best showing. His first one, his numbers tell a different story than if you actually go and watch the film back. Numbers-wise, had a decent game.
Yeah.
Actually putting the whole game together, probably not his best showing. Mind you, though, it was his first time playing with these guys, so that's understandable. Second game, only plays 5 minutes because he ends up going back to the locker room with the lower back soreness, and that was when we saw him not playing and not active for those couple of weeks, went to London with the big club, but still was really just working with Alex McKechnie, who is the Raptors director of sports medicine. So working with him, and then the third game, talking with Bennett after the game, I asked him if it was third time a charm for him, and he kind of chuckled and said, I guess it was, because third time down. That was when he really had, if you will, his breakout game with the 905, and Alex McKechnie was there to help him warm up, stretch him out prior to the game.
Yeah.
And I think doing the work off the court with the lower back and getting that figured out and knowing how he can deal with it and how you got to play with the lower back soreness, I think that was sort of his game where he had his aha moment, if you will.
Yeah.
And that was probably his best game with the 905. But his decision-making and his shot selection were two things that were kind of like he was juggling and trying to figure out. And that's something that we've seen all of the NBA assignment guys try and figure out is,
yeah,
no matter when they get assigned, everyone knows that they automatically have the green light and they're going to play big minutes. But part of their development is the mental maturity of figuring out when they pick their spots to pass, shoot, whatever it may be. But that third game with the 905, Bennett picked his spots perfectly and he established his game inside and then went outside. And in the first two games, he tried to establish it outside and then go inside. And the one thing with Bennett, and when he was drafted, they said this about him too, is he cannot fall in love with the outside shot. He's got to learn to play, consistently play with his back to the bucket because of his position and him being that tweener type of player.
Yeah.
But he's got to have it in his repertoire and his arsenal that he can play with his back to the basket and actually be consistent at it. And then once he can establish that and be consistent at it and get respect from that, that's when he can pull his defender out and extend that floor and extend the paint and open up the paint for his guards and even himself because he's got the ability to knock down the shot. And I think that third game with the 905 was the moment when he realized, okay, if I can figure out my inside game, the outside game is going to come. And that game as a whole for the 905, just in general, the whole team, everybody was figuring out and everybody knew. It seemed like everything was just clicking in that third game that Bennett was with them. So I think that's probably been where I've seen him grow the most in his 5 games with the 905.
We're speaking with Megan McPeak here on the TOT cast, Raptors 905 play-by-play commentary. Another thing I wanted to ask you, Megan, one of the guys that a lot of people were looking to and talking about once this team came into existence, a lot of people that thought was going to get a real push was going to be Bruno Caboclo. And so far this year, the numbers, they've been decent, and you're going to have to forgive my ignorance personally because I haven't had an opportunity to watch the Raptors 905 play enough, which I think is why it's such a privilege to have you on with us today. Explain to us what Bruno's process has been like, having watched him for most of the season, and where do you think he's at right now? Has he gotten any better? Has he regressed? Because one of the biggest things and one of the biggest complaints a lot of fans had about Bruno was the fact that he wasn't getting enough minutes in the former D-League team they were at last year, which was the Mad Ants, the Fort Wayne Mad Ants, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he wasn't getting a lot of minutes on that team. He was shared with 13 other teams on or 13 other NBA teams and that. It was just a big mess. So explain to us briefly, like, what's been his process so far coming into this? And I think it's something that people also need to tend to forget rather quickly, is they drafted this kid when he was only 19 or 18 years of age. So he's still technically, if he was up here, there's still a chance he could have been a junior in college at this point. So what has been his process and his development so far this season?
His main thing, in my opinion, outside of the actual game itself and his progression and his work ethic and whatnot, is his maturity and his frustration that he tends to get, that we have seen live, in person, on TV, on YouTube, whatever it may be, is when he gets down on himself. And that's, I think, been his biggest Achilles of his game, is he tends to get so easily frustrated and down on himself, and it takes him out of the game. He takes himself out of the game. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed it this season, throughout the entire time he's been with the 905, is that he struggled at the beginning. He had a glimpse of, okay, here, he's figured it out. And he struggled a bit. And then I don't know what it was, but he himself must have had an aha moment as well, because it's been getting few and far between that he's gotten down on himself when things aren't going. Because let's be serious. No one is ever going to have a perfect game every single game. No one's ever going to have the stats they want every single game. So I think he's finally realized that that is going to happen, and he's not going to have great nights every night.
Yeah.
And when he's not getting it on the offensive end, he's figured out that, guess what? I have a 7-foot wingspan. I can get things done defensively and have an impact defensively for my team. And yep. He's figured out that when it's offensively not going for him, he can get it done defensively for his team. And when it comes to the actual game, he's still struggling with not getting fouls and not fouling himself out of the game and picking up the ticky-tack fouls. Some of them are his own frustration fouls. Some of them are rotation-based, where he's filling in for the rotation when it's actually not his rotation, but no one's there. So he's going last minute, picking up a foul. So in that sense, he's figuring it out still. But for me, if he can just figure out the emotional side of things, I think it will come together very easily for him, because he's had games with the 905 where it's like, oh my goodness, this is the kid that Jay Billis was talking about when he said he's 2 years away from being 2 years away. And he's doing it quicker than we thought. But then he drops off a bit. So I think it's the emotional side of things that he's still trying to figure out. But I think now he's got a good group of people around him, not just his teammates, but also his support system, his agent, coaches that he knows, that he's worked with from Brazil. I know during, I think it was during December or January, he had one of his Brazilian coaches that he knew up here with him, talking to him and working through things with him and coaching with him. You could see through the game during that time that the progression was going up, and then it dropped a little bit. But I think it's at the point where if he can just get it emotionally figured out, he can keep progressing and keep going up and up and up. And he'll have that moment where it all comes together in fruition, and he'll really figure it out, and he'll be able to play and be able to play and have an impact and be a great player, whether it's for the Raptors or whether it's for another team in the league.
Megan McPeak, I'd like to thank you so much for joining us here on the TOTcast. Let's do this again sometime after the All-Star break.
No problem. Anytime. Let me know.
I'd love to get your get your updates on what's going on out in Mississauga, Raptors 905 at the Hershey Center. Be sure to check the website, Raptors 905. Go get some tickets. Go enjoy, because it's some great basketball. I mean, I keep promising you, Megan, I'm gonna come to one of the games. I guarantee you, it's gonna be. But now I'm finding out. I take a look at the schedule, and now they're like a month away. Now it's no games until like the 20th or something like that in February at the Hershey Center.
Yeah, they're on the road right now. They're in Erie, then they'll be home for practices, and then they head out down south to Texas and OKC, and then they've got that time off because it's everybody's favorite time of the year. And if
it
happens to be in north of the border for the first time in NBA history, with it being All-Star Week. Shout out to Ronald Roberts of the 905, named to the Eastern Conference D-League All-Star team, so he'll be repping the 905.
Congratulations to him.
All-Star game for the D-League. And then they head back out on the road, and then we don't get them at home until February 21st. But then March, we've got a heavy home schedule, so you know, that's the life of the D-League.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I look forward to seeing it and look forward to having you back on the TOT cast. Once again, this is Megan McPeak, Raptors 905 play-by-play analyst. Once again, thank you so much for coming on and joining us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, take care.
And that was, of course, Megan McPeak, the play-by-play analyst of the Raptors 905. You can always be sure to catch her either on YouTube for one of the games, or you could also be able to catch her on NBA TV Canada whenever the Raptors 905 are going to be playing there. A true talent, hardworking girl, and an absolute pleasure to interview, Chris.
Yeah, she sounded like a great conversation. For those that are interested as well, you can listen to the full interview on tipofthetower.com. There's a little more extended stuff that Ryan and Megan discussed on there, and yep. Very compelling.
Absolutely.
Very
compelling. One of the things actually we got into really briefly was Dellen Wright and Norman Powell. And it was perfect timing, us talking about him in the time that we did, because as soon as he got called up to the big club, he made a difference. I mean, he got his first ever start against the Phoenix Suns just a few nights ago. Didn't get any points, but to be perfectly honest, even when he was in the Raptors 905, if you listen to the full interview, one thing that Megan went in depth about was the fact that they're really trying to push him more towards the idea of defending and being a distributor for the big club, as opposed to just being a guy who's averaging 26 points a game like he is in the D-League right now. And they're actually saying the same thing in this, to a certain extent, of Dellen Wright. They're trying to get both of these guys the idea of, you know, unfortunately at this point in their career, they're going to have to play second fiddle because of the kind of roster they have right now sitting at the top, because guys that are sitting in front of them are all-stars, right? So
yeah, I think for a guy like Norman Powell, that will take some time to develop. But for a guy like Dellen Wright, I think that will come much quicker. He's got extremely long arms for a point guard.
Yes, he does.
And at Utah, playing in the Pac-12, Utah was known for defense first, slowing games down, half-court offense, just suffocating. That's stuff that if they're asking him to do with the 905, eventually with the Raptors, I feel like it'll be an easy transition for him.
Absolutely.
And he's a very hard-working player as well. Both of them are, actually. So, I mean, I don't see why neither can transition.
Exactly.
I just feel like it'll be a little more easier for Dellen Wright, but a little bit more time for Norman Powell.
Absolutely. But, I mean, there's nothing wrong with the idea of, you know, being able to be offensively gifted like they are, still being good on defense, basically just playing to your point, Chris. But one thing that I'm pleased to announce for all of our listeners, if they don't already know, a little bit of an update on the Raptors 905 leading into the NBDL All-Star Game. We now have the pleasure of announcing that Scott Suggs is going to be entered into the three-point shootout contest. And another guy who we actually just picked up, I believe it was 2 days ago, we just picked him up, John Jordan from Erie, the team that actually just snapped the Raptors 905. Another spoiler alert for you guys, the Raptors 905. Unfortunately, their winning streak got snapped, just like the Raptors in a sense.
Very similar times, too.
Yes, exactly. He'll be in the slam dunk contest representing the Raptors 905. So it's going to be an exciting time, not just for the big club with Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan. We're even seeing some of our guys in the development league getting recognized. And I think that's something to be commended. And I think that's something that speaks volumes about this team, considering it's their inaugural season.
I totally agree. All-Star Weekend is going to be a lot of fun here. And if there's one thing that I will be on full watch for, it is nothing to do with the Raptors. It is full-out Charles Barkley watch.
Yes.
Because I know how much – well, Charles went on TNT and said, I love Toronto. I'm ready to come. That's the worst impression ever. But Charles loves it here.
Nonsense.
And he said he's going to go visit Mississauga. He's going to be all over the place. So I'll be on the lookout for Charles.
I'm looking forward to it. And you better believe that I'll be doing the same thing. We might even have to call in a favor with Megan if he happens to show up.
That'd be pretty cool. I wouldn't mind meeting Charles, but I think we're asking for a lot now.
I think we are. But at the very least, we can get a photo with him.
That'd be pretty cool.
That'd be sweet.
I'd wear some Bama gear and take a photo with him because I know he went to Auburn, and I feel like it'd be pretty comical, and he would. I think he'd get a good kick out of it.
Oh, my God, absolutely. I mean, hell, if we were able to get some photos of Jack Armstrong. Shout out to Jack Armstrong. There's a true talent right there.
Yeah, great man. Great man.
But yeah, honestly, it's such an exciting time for Toronto basketball. Everyone, just keep your eyes peeled out in the city. You never know who you're going to run into as far as the All-Star Weekend goes, especially if you're a Hoops fan and you're in the areas and you're in the hotbeds of all of Toronto Hoops that is in the city. I mean, there's all sorts of things that could be going on at any given moment.
That will be a very busy weekend here.
And that wraps up this edition of the TOT cast. Of course, thank you so much for listening. Be sure to always follow and like us on Facebook. And if you ever want to reach out to the show, be sure to reach us at Tip of the Tower on Twitter. If you want to reach out to either myself or Chris O'Kranitz, you can reach me at RyanGreco416. You can reach Chris O'Kranitz at Chris O'Kranitz. And please be sure to subscribe us on iTunes and SoundCloud. As always, have yourselves a fantastic night. Have a great week. And we will see you next time.